This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, September 13th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's show, the B-Cycle e-bike share program in Boulder is experiencing record levels of ridership, and the heavy use has been making the bikes harder to find at stations around town. We'll speak with Boulder B-Cycle's general manager about the pros and cons of this increased ridership. This Week in Water will examine climate tipping points and what they imply in increments as small as a tenth of a degree. And we'll go to our listener comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines, and then it's How on Earth? On today's KGNU Science Show, we hear about the ever-fascinating honeybee. At 9 a.m. comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, Ginger Perry will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Luis Licon.
CU Denver will receive about $1.5 million in grants to help create a teacher workforce. The Department of Education announced Monday that they would be awarding the grants to recruit and retain teachers across the country. The Teacher Quality Partnership, TQP, grant funds programs to create teacher preparation courses in high-need community colleges and universities across the country. Colorado has 440 vacant teacher positions, according to the Colorado Department of Education. Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona said in a press release, "These programs help prepare, place, develop, and retain effective teachers and leaders in our schools and classrooms. Our students need quality educators now more than ever to address their academic and mental health needs." Coloradans who want to pursue a healthcare career could be eligible for no-cost tuition through a special program at Front Range Community College, FRCC. FRCC has received grants funds to pay the difference after financial aid for educational expenses related to healthcare occupations. Healthcare jobs are among the fast-growing fields in Colorado. The funds are available for students starting this semester through fall of 2025. Denver will provide cash assistance to lift individuals out of homelessness. KGNU's James Winson has more.
Denver's Mayor Michael B. Hancock and the Department of Housing Stability, along with the County and City of Denver, will soon provide cash assistance to more than 140 individuals experiencing homelessness. The money comes in part from federal dollars the city received from the American Rescue Plan Act. City Council approved the contract Monday to distribute $2 million in cash assistance to women, transgender, and gender nonconforming individuals and families in shelters. Mayor Hancock explains, "This direct cash assistance will help more than 140 women and families currently in shelters move into stable housing and provide support so they can stay housed while opening space in our shelters to serve more people." The contract provides up to $1,000 a month for 1 year in direct cash assistance to eligible people currently using the shelter system. Cities like Stockton, California, Vancouver, Los Angeles, and New York that utilize similar programs have seen positive outcomes with this assistance, such as increases in full-time employment, moving into full-time housing more quickly, increased food security, and reduction in spending on alcohol, drugs, and cigarettes. The pilot program is one of many the Department of Housing Stability has identified to address homelessness in Denver. The program will launch this November and run through 2023. For more information, please visit denvergov.org. For KGNU, I'm James Swenson.
The United States Department of Transportation awarded the Colorado Department of Transportation CDOT $100 million in grant money for its upcoming I-70 project in Floyd Hill. This project will be CDOT's costliest project ever, coming in a record of $700 million. Recently, CDOT has been applying for federal funding since the signing of the new $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill. The 6-mile construction project will reconfigure the sharpest turn on I-70, smooth it out, and flip traffic flow through part of Clear Creek Canyon. Many commuters have experienced traffic jams on this section of the highway. Governor Jared Polis said in a news release, "Getting this traffic jam fixed has been a priority of my administration for years, and it's a centerpiece of our 10-year plan for transportation." This project is expected to take 4 years to complete, beginning construction in late year of 2023. Today, people calling 911 will have access to a new emergency nurse navigation program through a partnership with the American Medical Response. The program aims to provide case-appropriate care instead of defaulting to emergency room visits. When someone calls 911, they will have an option to talk to a Colorado State licensed nurse. They could recommend various healthcare options, including virtual visits from an emergency physician, home health recommendations, and non-emergency transfer to a local healthcare provider. This program is first of its kind in Boulder County and won't affect any emergency calls. The City Council of Aurora approved a measure last night to limit the size of grass lawns in new constructions. The measure aims to conserve water in the drought-prone city and caps grass lawn sizes in new homes at 500 square feet. New lawns larger than that have an option for xeriscaping or turf. The city banned planting certain cool-weather turfs and certain grasses that use a lot of water in August. According to CBS, the city council hopes that the new lawn ordinance will cut about 25% of the city's water usage. Today's forecast is sunny and clear with a high of 85 degrees and a low of 54. In Denver, there's going to be a high of 88 and a low of 48. In Fort Collins, there's going to be a high of 87 and a low of 50. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young, and I'm joined in the studio by Kevin Krause, General Manager of Boulder B-Cycle. Good morning.
Good morning there, Shannon. How are you?
All right. Well, you know, before you came into the studio, we were outside discussing the possibility of setting up a B-Cycle station. So, what are the steps required to set up a B-Cycle station or host it on your organization's land?
First of all, it's really exciting that there is such interest in bike share locally and an interest in growing the system. We're lucky here that the system is one of the longest running bike share systems in the country, and that for a city of Boulder's size, the system's already pretty large. We have about 300 bikes out on the street at 50 station locations. And of course, we'd love there to be more. So we consider new station locations, really, we look at how densely used the area is, whether that's like mostly a residential area or a commercial area, or more like kind of an events focus area. And then also how often it's likely to be used. Like, is this an area that has both daytime and nighttime uses? Is it used 7 days a week or just 5 days a week? And all of that kind of goes into us deciding, like, do we think we could bring bike share here and could it be self-sustaining?
And how do you monitor that use?
Our stations are software controlled, and so we're always looking, able to look at a map and see which stations are the most popular on a given day, week, month, year. And then, you know, we know that not every station is the top all the time, and that's okay because we want to have a lot of connecting points. Some stations function more as like outliers that then feed in to a more central location. There are some stations that are very transit linked or transit adjacent and then let people kind of, you know, funnel into one area or go out from one area. So we watch that data sort of on a short-term basis, but also on a long-term basis. We occasionally relocate stations if they're really underperforming compared to others in similar areas around town. But by and large, as we've grown the system over now more than 11 years, we've just tended to add to it. And every new station is a new point that connects to every other station.
What are the five busiest stations in Boulder?
As of now, fall of 2022, all of the busiest stations are primarily serving students on and around the CU Boulder main campus. One of our busiest ones is also at the Williams Village off-campus housing area, but the five busiest are definitely CU serving areas, near the University Memorial Center, near the CU Center for Community, near Williams Village. Historically, like looking back even a full 10 plus years that the system's been up and running, some of our downtown stations were some of the busiest. The stations at 15th and Pearl Streets and 11th and Pearl Streets that people might know.
What's the traffic been like lately?
It's really been different. 2022 has already been, as of now, early September, has already been our biggest year ever. So we last year, we really the system had kind of reached its what we thought was its previous apex of around 100,000 trips in a year, and it was there from around 2017 through 2020. And then all of a sudden last year, through a combination of factors, I think some COVID-related and some due to the introduction of e-bikes in the system, in 2021, ridership really jumped. And so we actually went to about a little over 250,000 trips last year. We've already hit that 250,000 plus trips in 2022, even though we still have almost 4 months remaining in the year.
The B-cycle stations have been kind of sparsely populated lately. What's going on?
Well, we're having so much ridership that we're seeing bikes come through our shop more frequently for repairs. So we're really glad for the usage, and we're also responding by trying to increase our number of mechanics for maintaining the bikes, increase our presence out in the field, kind of discovering those errors to repair in the first place, and then eventually adding more bikes and hopefully more station locations.
Okay, so you have City of Boulder. Because I know they have them at the libraries, they have them, or at least the main library in the park, the North Boulder Rec Center. Then you have CU Boulder and Boulder Housing Partners. Who else are some of the biggest partners of B-Cycles?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, in terms of where we have stations located, we have very good coverage and have since the beginning all downtown. So, you know, we work with a number of entities downtown, including downtown Boulder Partnership, and various companies located down there to get passes to employees. We want those to ideally serve that someone could take a bus into downtown or carpool into downtown and still have a bike available. Looking outside of the downtown core, Google is one of our largest partners. They've provided bike share stations and passes to all employees, and so that's one of the most common ways that Google employees get around town once they're at the office is on Boulder B-Cycle bikes.
And you had mentioned that the university is making up, you know, a huge part of the traffic at this moment. Do you have any census of the number of students who are using B-Cycles?
Yeah, that number is really exciting. So as far as we know, there's around 35,000 students at CU Boulder. And as of today, still early September 2022, we have over 12,000 students registered with active passes. Student bike fees pay for all CU students to have free bike share access. And the program has just been incredibly, incredibly successful. So, yeah, we know that a lot of our members are students. We know that a lot of the student body is taking advantage of the bike share pass that their student fees fund. And that truly is the main driver at this point of the kind of meteoric growth in trip use that we've seen.
What type of accessibility initiatives does B-Cycle have?
It really depends on how frequently someone is using the system, how the cost ends up shaking out for them. The least expensive way that someone could use the system would be to just download the app and use our pay-per-trip pass option. If you were a frequent user of the system, either a monthly or an annual pass option may end up making the most sense and could really be the cheapest way of getting around town. As far as accessibility options, we have a program with Boulder Housing Partners where all residents actually get free B-Cycle access, a free annual pass. And we have an option that we have not yet widely publicized of a discounted annual pass option that can be, you could register for that one. Really, at this point, a rider interested in that one needs to reach out to us. You can write us at boulder@bcycle.com. And write us about that pass option. It can either just be registered in the app and then bikes can be checked out in the app, or someone, if they wanted to or needed to, could also pay for that option in cash, and we could present them with a card that would allow them to check out the bikes without needing to use a phone.
What is the general life cycle of a B-Cycle?
Looking back to when the system first launched, some of our oldest bikes were, and these would be red pedal bikes, some of those bikes were in service for more than a decade. And of that fleet, the average bike crossed the U.S. almost two times based on mileage. And they were, you know, sitting outside day in and day out for years and years. We're seeing that life cycle condensed with our electric bike fleet in that they're being ridden so many more times that we don't expect that they'll last a full 10 years. We're still hoping they'll last 5 years, which is a very long time in the life cycle of equipment used this hard and stored outside. But we're glad to have durable bikes.
When did B-Cycle start creating its white pedal assist fleet?
That transition started occurring in March of 2021. That was as in our previous nonprofit incarnation, Boulder Bike Sharing, we actually were able to launch 100 electric bikes. And at that time, it was only about a third of the fleet that was electric. And immediately, even though a third of the fleet was electric, about two-thirds of our trips were taken on those bikes. So there was such a clear sense that that's where, you know, the kind of bikes that people wanted to ride. And so throughout the year, the city of Boulder conducted a request for proposals process, a proposal that we submitted in tandem with Trek, which is the parent company of B-Cycle. That proposal was selected. And so then we actually switched the system over to being owned and run by B-Cycle and fully electrified the system, completing that in November of 2021.
Kevin Krause, anything else that you would like to add that I didn't think to ask?
Yes, and that is that for anyone who hasn't tried bike share yet or tried Boulder B-Cycle specifically, I just encourage people to give it a try. One of the things we actually hear most frequently, either from people who are bikers and own bikes on their own, is they say, oh, I already have a bike, I wouldn't try this. And looking back a couple of years, some of our riders who took our annual rider survey, some of the people who already owned their own bike were some of our most enthusiastic supporters because they understood the value of a bike that they could just kind of summon on demand, use it when they need to get somewhere or use it only for a one-way trip. So that was one thing I wanted to say, is that even though Boulder is a really great town for biking and people may have many bikes in their home or in their garage, there's still a reason to consider adding on a bike that isn't yours so you can ride it occasionally.
It's the only time I've ever been on an electric bike. So I have my own regular pedal bike, but I've never tried an electric bike outside of a B-Cycle. So there's that too.
That's another great reason. Absolutely. Yeah. If you haven't been on an electric bike yet, this is a very easy way to start. The fun of it is there. It'll help you accelerate, kind of flattens hills, and it's a great way to try it out.
Kevin Krause, General Manager of Boulder B-Cycle, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you, Shannon.
For the latest edition of This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
A sea creature that lives forever. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Will the Green Prince be a Green King?
The death of Queen Elizabeth last week has led to the ascension of a lifelong environmentalist to the British throne. However, King Charles III will likely be less of a climate activist than he was as Prince Charles.
50 years ago, when he was in his 20s, Charles spoke publicly of the danger of oil pollution destroying beaches and seabirds. He warned of factories contaminating rivers and polluting the air with smoke.
He's been an active supporter of wildlife conservation and anti-poaching efforts. In 2021, Prince Charles launched Terra Carta, a version of the Magna Carta, through which businesses were urged to recognize fundamental rights and the value of nature, including support for international agreements on climate, biodiversity, and desertification.
But now as king, he will have to express himself differently because of the traditional limits on the sovereign from taking an overt political stance on the UK's politics and its decision-making.
Holding his tongue in public on climate issues will likely be a challenge for the king, as his new Prime Minister Liz Truss is set on lifting a ban on fracking and approving more drilling in the North Sea to increase energy supplies. The country might also keep some coal plants operating that had been set to close this year.
However, Charles is expected to meet with the Prime Minister in private on a weekly basis, during which he may express his concerns about climate change.
And as far as climate change goes, it's not game over. Every fraction of a degree we limit global warming reduces the risk of hitting tipping points after which significant changes to oceans and weather would be irreversible.
That's according to a new study that shows multiple tipping points could be triggered if global temperature rises 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels.
Once a tipping point is reached, even if temperatures stop rising, changes put in motion like melting ice sheets or disappearing rainforests will continue and become self-perpetuating.
Even now at 1.1 degrees Celsius of warming, the researchers say we are in the danger zone for five tipping points, including permafrost thawing that releases greenhouse gases and the disruption of the ocean currents in the North Atlantic, changing rain patterns which billions of people depend on for food.
If we do reach 1.5 degrees of warming, additional tipping points are possible, including changes to northern forests and losing all mountain glaciers.
But there is hope. The chance of crossing the tipping points can be reduced by immediately cutting greenhouse gas emissions.
We've all heard tales of the legendary Fountain of Youth, a mythical spring that can turn back the clock for anyone drinking or bathing in its waters. Immortality is fiction, of course, unless you're Turritopsis dornii, a tiny jellyfish the size of a fingernail that can return to its juvenile state, akin to a butterfly becoming a caterpillar again.
Scientists have known for a couple of decades about this so-called immortal jellyfish, which under stress from injury or a lack of food will reabsorb its tentacles and sink to the seafloor as a baby polyp to start its life anew.
Now, according to researchers from the University of Oviedo in Spain who sequenced the immortal jellyfish genome, we have an inkling as to how they defy death.
The team found that when compared to a related mortal jellyfish, Turritopsis dornii has double the number of genes that repair and protect DNA, which allow it to produce more restorative proteins.
It also has unique mutations that prevent its chromosome's protective caps, called telomeres, which in humans tend to shorten with age, from deteriorating.
The researchers said their goal isn't to achieve human immortality, but rather that the genes they've identified could offer insights into numerous diseases associated with aging.
And finally, heat waves, drought, wildfires. California is grappling with severe challenges brought on by the climate crisis. So, to up its resiliency game, the state is turning to a creature once hunted nearly to extinction and periodically maligned as a nuisance, the North American beaver.
Sure, the rodent builds dams that divert waterways and cause floods, but it turns out that's a good thing. Those piles of sticks and mud create ponds and channels that spread water over the landscape, giving it more time to soak into the soil, which ultimately keeps plants green even during drought.
That's according to Emily Fairfax at Cal State Channel Islands, whose research in 2020 showed that during wildfires, areas where beavers were active remained lush while adjacent land was scorched.
Given beavers' ability to protect and restore ecosystems, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife wants to enlist them as part of a nature-based, cost-efficient solution to the climate crisis and use their engineering skills to increase wildfire resiliency and boost biodiversity.
The department has posted its first job listings for senior environmental scientists who will oversee restoration efforts and reevaluate programs that installed beaver dam analogs that mimic the real deal.
So we're still friends, beavers? No hard feelings for those days of relocation and extermination?
Nah, that's water under the dam.
That's it for this week in water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU.
I just have a question. I'm interested in the program you did, which was an interview with a guy who had done a lot of work on the Colorado River Basin. I think it was on Thursday morning about 9 o'clock. I never heard the contact information of how to deal with or hear the program again. Thanks so much. Bye.
The listener was inquiring about a program that aired during the Wednesday, September 7th edition of A Public Affair. You can find that program at kgnu.org/apublicaffair. If you'd like to share a comment about something you heard on KGNU, you can call us at 303-447-9911 and leave us a voicemail. We play messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Luis Licon, James Swenson, Alexis Kenyon, Rosanna Longo-Better, Jamie Sudler, and Franny Halperin for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after the news headlines from the BBC.